shove it.
Howdy, folks. Welcome to another episode of Take This Pod and Shove It, the podcast where comedians and country fans build the ultimate country music playlist, one song at a time. I'm one of your hosts. My name is Tyler Snodgrass. Joining me, as always, he's a little bit country and I'm a little bit rock and roll. I'm joined by Danny Maupin, as always. Hey, Danny.
Yeah, I'll rock and I'll roll, you know. I'll swing out to a good old jammin' tune and I'll also roll down a hill. That's one of the things I like to do still to this day and age. 42 years old, rowing down hills at family restaurants. Anyway, howdy do, you shovelos, you shove heads, you dirty little shovel fuckers. Thanks for tuning in and hopping on the shove boat that takes you to the shove plane that'll get you all the way past the atmosphere so you can make some space shove and anti-gravity. This is Danny Maupin.
Flawless as ever. We're just going to jump right in. I'm very excited about this episode. We have got a guest that I'm a huge fan of his comedy. I'm also a huge fan of his podcast, Who Cares About the Rock Hall, which I should mention is on at the moment an indefinite hiatus, but there's a huge back catalog of wonderful episodes for any music nerd / comedy fan. It's a great podcast for that. So if you like us, I'm sure you would like his show. He also just put out a great album called Funny Songs and Sketches. Today we are joined by Joe Quazala. How are you, Joe?
Oh, yeah.
I'm great. Thanks for having me back, guys.
Yeah, man. Of course. We had a great time talking to you like a summer and a half ago on your show. And I was very honored to be on it. We had a great talk about the Rock Hall,
yeah,
and Dolly's induction and things of that sort.
Right. And I'm also, I said, having me back, it's like, have I been on this show?
Yeah.
Or have you just been on my show? I can't remember.
We have been on your show, but I look forward to having you back already.
It's all part of the podiverse.
Okay. Yeah. That was real presumptuous there. Yeah. No, but it's great to continue this conversation. Just the fellas, if you know what I mean. Cut out that pesky female co-host of mine and get to the real dirt.
Yeah, we cut out that entirely. But so I'm the, what was it that your a commenter said? She's like the mean wife or something.
Oh, one of our very first reviews just said, wife acts like stupid baby. Which, you know, for your listeners, to clarify, she is not my wife. She's not my girlfriend. We are not in a relationship, nor have we ever been. There is an assumption made that she is wife and that she acts like stupid baby. So that you could argue, but like the wife part.
That's the origin of AI. Was that comment?
Yeah. Right.
Just like ChatGPT giving it a shot. Wife. Yeah. Sounds like fate.
Wife acts like stupid baby.
I was just going to say, Danny is the wife that is stupid baby on our show. Yeah. But,
okay, know, got
he
it.
He
got
wears it.
It
proudly.
Yeah, I do. It's a badge of honor for me. Yeah. Tyler's my house. Not my house husband.
I'm your house.
He's my work husband.
Yeah, there you go.
People that like say that stuff around you. Oh, he's my work husband. It's like, okay, that's still kind of weird.
I want to fuck him at work.
Right, exactly.
Oh, okay.
That's what it always makes me go to there. Yeah.
If I could fuck at work, I would choose him.
That's who
I would
choose.
Oh. Yeah. I would be that.
Well, I think you should start introducing Danny as your work husband and vice versa. I think you guys should on the show refer to each other as work husbands. I also liked house husbands. I didn't 100% know what that meant,
also.
But there's something about it that was
it's like a stay-at-home dad, I guess, kind of thing.
Oh, sure, like a housewife. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, right. I see.
Yeah.
Gotcha. The old reversal.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, we'll play with that. We'll incorporate that into the intro and see how long we can make it next time.
Yeah, really stretch it out. I felt like it was not long enough, in my opinion.
Oh, that's really nice of you. It's nice of you to say. Well, let's jump right in. So, Joe, you are an expert on the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I don't think it's unfair to say that at all.
Right, and it's not like I went to school for it. It just turned out that I was paying attention and nobody else was. So default, that makes me one of the leading experts in the world. And so with the podcast, I kind of leaned into that and only became more of an expert over the 5 years that I did it. So yeah, I am an expert. I know a lot. I kind of can tell you how it works and like why certain things tend to happen or don't happen. And I've also got a lot of stupid statistics and numbers in my head too.
I definitely want to get into all of that. And of course, sorry, there's, can you,
but your ride's here.
Yeah.
Damn. I knew. See, the Rock Hall is a shadowy organization. As soon as you start talking about it, you're in trouble with the law. And I'm sorry, you're taking the brunt of it. They really should be coming for me. But
I know. It's because I'm hosting the room. That's how they assume I'm the ringleader in all of this.
Cut you out. The whole thing falls over.
Yeah, I'm doing all this on a VPN.
Nice, yeah. So you're the one.
I don't even know what that means, really.
No, that would work. Yeah, it kind of keeps your IP address and secret.
That's right.
Oh, okay, all right.
Oh, well, my IP address.
Oh, my IP. Oh, yeah.
More words I don't really know.
Yeah. So yes, you're an expert on the Rock Hall, and we're going to get into country music's place and future in the Rock Hall on today's episode. Mm-hmm. But before we get into that, I wanted to ask, what is your history with country music specifically?
Yeah, so I grew up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, which is not the South, but very close to West Virginia. I don't think people necessarily know that, but you know, West Virginia, like for a section of the border between Ohio and Pennsylvania, West Virginia cuts up the little panhandle there. And so if you're to go due west from Pittsburgh, you will hit Wheeling, West Virginia before you hit Ohio. And so there is a proximity to what you would call the South, even though like the latitudes, I guess, are the same. That being said, I didn't feel as though like the radio in Pittsburgh, which I listened to a lot of, that there was a strong country presence, and that if there was, it was kind of isolated to the high end of the dial. Like I think like truly like 107.9, I think was the country station that I can recall from Pittsburgh. And I think there was another. We had a Froggy. Did you guys have a Froggy? Do you know what that is? Froggy.
No, I don't know what that is.
I want to say there's more than one station in the country that is branded as Froggy, which is a country station. Kind of like how different markets have their own Jack FM, Bob FM,
right.
Dennis FM, or whatever. I don't know that there's a Dennis, but I
hope there is.
I wish a Glenn. I'm pretty sure, and maybe I'm fully wrong, and there's just one. There's one Froggy, and it's just the one in Pittsburgh. And I thought it was a,
but it felt like an institution.
Hold on, Froggy as a brand. Okay, now I'm looking up the Wikipedia. Used for a variety of radio stations in the U.S. Yeah, so I was correct.
Okay,
and so yeah, we had a Froggy, but I never listened to it, and I never like had to. There wasn't a ton of bleed over, and I didn't. So I had like no real country knowledge or background, except for the crossovers. And when I was growing up in the 90s, the big crossovers were like Shania Twain and Faith Hill. Those are the two that stick out to me primarily. Right. Because I know people talk about Garth Brooks from the 90s era, but if you're not listening to country radio, he is not showing up on the pop stations in any significant way, at least in the market I was in back then. So I spent decades of my life with almost no knowledge of this towering figure of pop culture and music, you know, outside of like SNL. I knew Garth Brooks was huge, but I couldn't tell you one song. It's still kind of to this day, it's like, I know Friends in Low Places is kind of the signature Garth Brooks song. Mm-hmm. And then I don't have anything else beyond that.
You're the only person that became a Garth Brooks fan backwards from liking Chris Gaines first.
Yeah, no, you want to talk Gaines, we can talk Gaines all
rock
day.
Rock album, his greatest hits? Yeah, it's really something.
I do love, the very idea. I love that Garth Brooks introduced Chris Gaines from the SNL stage. He went, ladies and gentlemen, Chris Gaines.
Exactly.
I think that's incredible.
That is.
But it wasn't,
right,
No. I didn't have much else to say except that when I was in college, for like maybe the first few summers, I worked as a parking lot attendant at various parking lots in Pittsburgh, many of them near venues, music venues or sports arenas. And like when Rascal Flatts came to town, that's the first time I got an indication that like, oh, like country's like huge. Like, people my age like country. Because I was like, I don't even know. It seems fringe. It seems niche. But like seeing all these Pittsburghers show up in cowboy hats to Rascal Flatts or Brooks and Dunn or whoever it was at the time. I remember there were at least a few that I was like, oh, like, I don't know at all who these people are, but they are, they're massive. They're really, really connecting with people.
Mm-hmm. Connecting with yins instead of y'all.
Yeah, exactly. When yins becomes y'all, the Rascal Flatts comes to town.
Right. Joe, I think what you're saying about country music kind of having this surprisingly big audience is my experience also, because not to get into this because we've talked about it on the show a lot, but I was definitely not a country fan growing up, even though I felt like I was surrounded by it. And the longer I've been on this old blue marble, the more I've been like, oh, people are country fans and not even talking about it sometimes. With the Garth Brooks thing, where did I hear this? I think I heard this on the podcast Hit Parade that he deliberately avoided pop radio because he wanted to like remain a country purist, but he would have crossed over if he had allowed his singles to be like purchased in like whatever way they, I don't know,
yeah,
it's like chart presence or whatever.
It's so weird, you know. We've delved on my show, we've delved into Dolly Parton last year when she got in the Rock Hall, and Willie Nelson this year when he got in, and kind of I've learned a little bit about like country audiences and the Nashville system and the way that like you can easily seemingly betray the audience or the kind of community by playing a little bit of the pop game too, and how that can be a really sticky situation. And that, like, you know, Willie's his career really kicked off when he left Nashville and went back to Texas, as you guys know, and that was seen as like an extremely rebellious and like dangerous move, because it could have blown up in his face if he was fighting the machine that was the only established way for country artists to get their music out there or to make music. And then Dolly similarly, like, clearly wanted to do pop and then did do pop with, you know, Here You Come Again or Nine to Five, but a lot of those songs still contain trace elements of country, you know, whether it's like a slide guitar or a fiddle somewhere deep in the mix, just to make sure that like no one thinks that you're leaving the nest and never to come back. It's interesting.
I mean, to your point about Willie, I mean, they literally, that's where outlaw the name comes from. It's not because they were criminals. It's literally, oh, you're going against Nashville, that is outlaw shit. Like, nobody does that successfully.
But I will say, in terms of my own personal connection to country music, it was really what I never fully dove head first, but it's like kind of when the rock guys started to flirt with country, and I was learning, like, I was getting like the albums from the Byrds and learning about them, and then you get to Sweetheart of the Rodeo, and then you know, which is a country album and has famously Graham Parsons on it, and that shit is so good, and that's one of the first like forays into country. And then similarly, like, Elvis Costello has always had an interesting relationship to country. You know, he has an album called Almost Blue, which came right at his kind of imperial phase of, you know, putting out all these great new wave records. And he just did this covers album. It's all country songs. And he covers Graham Parsons and the Flying Burrito Brothers and George Jones and Johnny Cash. And so that was another way that I learned a lot about those songs. But what's interesting about Elvis Costello is also, when I was getting those first albums of his, I would get like the deluxe editions or whatever and hear all these demos or outtakes. And on almost all of those first very new wave albums, there are country songs he wrote and recorded that didn't wind up on the albums that are really good. So like, I was kind of prepped for the Almost Blue album because I was like, oh yeah, this guy's always like flirting with country, and then was never released at the time or something.
Oh, wow. I knew about the Almost Blue album, but I did not know that he had been, I don't know, dabbling in country for years.
Yeah,
and years.
He has a song called Cheap Reward that I know because it was an outtake, maybe on that first, but maybe could have been the second album. That's a really, it's just a great country song.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I would recommend it.
Yeah, I'm going to look
it up.
Check
that shit out. Yeah.
Yeah. A Stranger in the House is another one. Just kind of these early 70s Elvis country song, Elvis Costello yeah. country songs yeah, that, yeah. you know, are really good. And, you know, I think on the extended Almost Blue album, he does some of them with, I want to see, he does one with George Jones, and he does one with, like, he does some duets of his country songs with legit guys. It's really, really cool.
Wow. Oh, that's so interesting.
Nice.
Yeah, we need to
you do heard it first here, folks.
Costello episode also.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, his country, he has country bona fide, so to speak, you know, and he's got a, it's a, yeah, there's a few, and like REM also would like flirt with country with some of their stuff, like for the sure. song Driver 8 has like a very country vibe to it. And then it was interesting when Lionel Richie got into the Rock Hall a few years ago. Right. Understanding how much of his shit is pure country, which led to later, I think he did an album with country guys of yeah. his like catalog, and it like
yeah, right. a country worked. Fried.
What's the Kenny Rogers song that he wrote?
Oh, he wrote "Lady."
Yeah,
Lady.
He wrote "Lady." Yeah,
and "Stuck on You" is like, yeah. plainly country, yeah. but it was mm-hmm. just, you know,
absolutely
yeah, still adult. I think maybe that wound up on the country charts, but very low. But yeah, I mean, just because it was Lionel Richie, it was much. Mm-hmm. It was considered still like adult contemporary or pop instead of country.
Absolutely, yeah.
I think that segues nicely into talking about the Rock Hall's recent embracing of country artists. Of course, you know, it was pretty easy. It's pretty easy to throw flowers on Dolly Parton and Willie Nelson, you know.
Yes.
that's not a controversial act or anything.
Not at all. Mommy and Daddy of country, they're yeah, beloved.
Exactly.
Right. Icons among icons, you know what I mean? So it's, yeah, mm-hmm. exactly.
Yeah. But at the ceremonies, we've also had Sheryl Crow show up, and she's now inducted. She flirts with country, I would say. Brandi Carlile is performing. Absolutely. Chris Stapleton
all the time.
Performed.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's always there. So, Joe, I guess we were curious. We wanted you to speak on, like, what is the Hall's relationship with country? And then what does this look like going forward for the Rock Hall,
right.
this shadowy, strange institution that changes mm-hmm. its mind about things periodically.
So I think most people, when they heard that Willie Nelson got in this year and that Dolly Parton got in last year, it's confusing, because it's like, okay, it took them a long time, right? Like mm-hmm. these, yeah. both of them have been eligible pretty much since the beginning of this institution. They could have been inducted in the 80s. If the yeah. Hall chose to do that. And then if they wanted to put them in with kind of their contemporaries, they could have put them in the 90s. It's just, it's the for a thing that's been around for like 35-ish years, it might seem strange, and that is indicative of this kind of sea change, which is that the Hall, for the most part, outside of some side categories and some more crossovery type artists, like I would say Johnny Cash and Brenda Lee, definitely have more kind of rock and roll cred and don't seem as solidly country as Willie and Dolly. Country was like one of the one things that was like, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, we do not do country. You have to draw the line somewhere. There's mm-hmm. always that criticism, like, why isn't it just the Music Hall of Fame? And I think there are boundaries to be drawn about what is rock and roll, and it is a wide map, but country was always on the outside. I think the idea being that, one, there's already a Country Hall of Fame that was established in the early 60s when rock and roll was just getting going. Mm-hmm. And so that's one thing. And that also kind of transitions to, if there was a Country Music Hall of Fame that was ready to go in the early 60s, that means country as a thing was already around and had an established canon before rock and roll. So you can draw a line between those things. Country may have seeped its way, and I think absolutely did seep its way into the creation of rock and roll, but mm-hmm. it's a separate thing. You guys even jokingly said it earlier in this episode, I'm a little bit country, I'm a little bit rock and roll. Like right. in just like pop culture, we've always just kind of thought of them as very separate things. But I think what's happening with the Hall in the past 2 years specifically is a few things. One is, I just think there are these ceremonies that are produced concerts every year, and we are starting to run out of the rock and roll icons that that are right. still with us.
Sure, yeah.
Elton John was inducted in 1994. Right. Paul McCartney was inducted twice. His last induction was 99. Bruce was inducted in 99. U2 was 2005. You know, and as we've crept forward, it's like, what are the big names that we have left to make this? You know, they finally pulled the trigger on inducting Tina Turner and Carole King again in 2021. Those were two, like, kind of lingering. They've been inducted, but they should be a solo artist, blah, blah, blah. And so then that happened. And so there's kind of this slot for the legend. And I think that was a move to rectify that. And that's kind of a cynical point of view, like thinking of it like a TV show producer, thinking of it like a concert producer. I think that's true. But I also think that as we are seeing now, country have a much closer relationship with rock and with pop, we're going to eventually get to a point where we start to induct someone like, say, Taylor Swift, who has that strong country background, but is such a pop cultural force and figure that she is rock and roll, she is pop, she's a million things, and she will get in the Rock Hall. Do we want to get to that point and then go, oh, whoops, we forgot to induct Dolly Parton when we had the chance, right?
Right.
Or when we get to any of these, like whether they're alt country or they are, I mean, you look at the charts this year, I think it's so crazy that so many, like historically many country artists went to number one on the pop charts this year, mm-hmm. whether it's Morgan Wallen or Oliver Anthony or who did go to number one, or you know, Luke Combs. Was it Luke Combs?
Fast Car. Yeah.
He did Fast Car. I don't know if Fast Car went to number one, but I do know Try That in a Small Town did go to number one.
Jason Aldean song.
Aldean. I was forgetting his name. But Fast Car was also a huge song this year as well. And then also you've got, like I said, Taylor Swift, and you've got Miley, another person who came from the country world. So I just think as we're seeing those rivers kind of cross and blend now, there's some work to do in the like kind of beginning stages of what developed into now, if that makes any sense at all.
No, yeah, I know. I think that makes sense. And being a listener of your show, you know, this is pretty familiar territory, thinking about it like, okay, so we have to put on a big show. We have to get eyes on us. So like we have to, like, it seems like with the people who make decisions at the Rock Hall, they are always trying to think a few steps ahead, and just remaining relevant is as big a deal as like actually bestowing honor upon people. And it seems like that's kind of what they were doing with Dolly and Willie, because even though they deserve any accolade you could come up with, also it's like, oh, they are old and they are huge in all music, not just country. So let's get them on camera, maybe?
Yeah, totally. I mean, like, I wonder if this would have happened if they were no longer with us.
Right. And that was a question I have for you, because people bring up, well, if Willie's in, Waylon. Of course, Willie has had much more of an impact on, like, pop culture in general than Waylon has. But I'd love to hear what you have to say, but I don't think Waylon is going to get in. He's been dead for a long time, and he is, you know, very rock influenced, but he's also squarely country, I think.
Totally, totally. I mean, that's, and I don't know. The thing is, like you said, Willie Nelson.
But he does have like a tie to rock and roll. He was like Buddy Holly's bass player.
Exactly. And I was just going to bring that up.
And like, he was Buddy Holly's bass player. He covered Three Dog Night songs on his country albums.
He did cover
like
a lot.
Like,
I mean, Waylon famously. Famously was going to be on the plane that came down.
Yeah.
Instead of one of them, I think there was a coin toss and they, whatever it was. But no, Waylon doesn't have the iconic status that Willie does,
right?
In the sense that, like, as someone, and I think I can speak to this, and one of the reasons I'm pretty good at being able to tell this kind of thing from the Rock Hall's perspective is I don't have that like kind of country background. Like, I don't know what Waylon Jennings looks like. Like I could maybe like come up with some ideas based on when his son played him in Walk the Line, and me kind of remembering that movie from, you know, 20 years ago.
Yeah,
but
yeah, and Willie and Dolly definitely have looks, like, you know.
Yes, and like Willie was in We Are the World, and you know Dolly was in movies, and you know they both have like a very, they're almost like a cartoon character. You can like draw what they look like.
Yeah.
Whereas, but like you were saying, Waylon Jennings probably has more rock and roll in him and his career, and he was more, he flirted with rock and roll probably more than both of them, but he's not with us, and he doesn't quite have the, like, he's a god amongst country people, and I think he's a god amongst like music people as well, but I think if he got on a ballot he would get in. I do just because it's like it is a huge name when it comes down to it. You know, it wouldn't be as much of a slam dunk, but it's still, you know, he's one of the outlaws, right?
Yeah.
And I know that Willie, when he was accepting his award, shouted out Waylon and shouted out Kris Kristofferson, which those are the three outlaws, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah,
yeah.
They're the other two who's already highwaymen.
Right. The highwaymen.
Yeah.
That's what it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, Kris is still with us, and he has a higher profile because he was a movie star, you know, and he was you know, and I like I'm like, was Kris Kristofferson? He wasn't in like now. I just want to know the stupidest movies that Kris Kristofferson
was
in.
He was in Blade.
I know
he's Blade's mentor. Blade.
That's what I was thinking.
I was like, he's in something kind of silly,
kind of insane.
But he was also in like A Star Is Born with Barbara Streisand.
Yes, that's it. And he's in Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore, right? And he's in Heaven's Gate. Like, so yeah, I mean, he has a higher profile, I think, because of that. Obviously, Dolphin Tale and Dolphin Tale 2, but I don't need to tell you guys that.
Yeah, but we could just quote it right now if we want to.
Did I see Dolphin Tale 2 in the theater? And having not seen Dolphin Tale, I mean, we could talk about that another time. But I certainly
that's
did.
Another Kris Gaines Kirk Crooks situation. I got to see how it ends before I see how it starts.
Right. But I think Kris and Waylon, especially because Willie called them out, I think are in a position. Kris probably with the better chance just because he's still with us.
Right.
But Waylon with a better, just because I think Waylon's cred musically is probably a little bit, a notch or two above Kristofferson's, I think. But this is all the perception of an outsider. I don't know.
Yeah.
But there's also, you know, Bernie Taupin was inducted this year, and he singled out Merle Haggard as an influence on him as a songwriter. And he's another one. Again, this is all just as an outsider, and sometimes this is the way to do it, because the people who get into the Rock Hall are just the people who have widespread name recognition. Merle Haggard is someone I know is supposed to be very good and has albums that are supposed to be very good.
Sure.
He
also has 100 albums, and a few are iconic, but he has a million of them. So
sure. But I think Merle was on the 500 greatest albums list that Rolling Stone put out. So, you know, that means kind of rock critics and rock people like and appreciate Merle. I mean, like Elton John's songwriter was saying it, and that's not, even though Elton has flirted with country in ways that are, you know, that honky tonk, that honky cat.
Bordeaux or something like that. Is that what it's called?
The Chateau, Honky Chateau.
Chateau. I knew it was something French sounding.
Tumbleweed Connection. He's always had like some kind of, you know, country-ish imagery. But Merle, Waylon, and Kris, three likely. I'm curious if they will utilize the side categories. Because one thing that, like, if I'm honest about the inclusion of more country into the Rock Hall, that kind of, I don't know if it bums me out, but it's just if you're going to be like, okay, now we include country into the Rock Hall, there's already like a huge backlog of snubs for people who are definitively rock and roll. Now it's like, okay, we have to include hundreds more now that we have this whole gigantic world of people, of really great musicians and people who've really contributed. So you have to find those people that kind of exist in both and or are really big enough to like count for everything the way Willie and Dolly definitely did.
Right. Well, it's also been including so much hip hop in the recent years too, which I mean, I'm all for it. Doesn't bother me or whatever, but like that, mm-hmm. so that even opens up the umbrella even more. So now you're considering country and the world of hip hop when it used to just be like literally like they kept it really close on rock and roll. And
it's
just been expanding every year. So you, mm-hmm. it makes it harder to pick.
Right. And, but what's been kind of easier about hip hop though, is it's been like an on-ramp onto hip hop since hip hop started to become eligible. Cause like hip hop wasn't eligible pretty much until the mid 2000s or so. And so you get Grandmaster Flash in 2007. And then in 2009, you get Run DMC. And then 2012, you get Beastie Boys. So it's like, you can, it's not like all of a sudden, like with country, snap your fingers. Okay, now we're going to consider hundreds more. Hip hop, it's like, okay, we've been like, in the early days, there's just like not a lot of people you can choose from. And there's a little bit more. And the Hall has been pretty consistent about like getting those big names in when they become eligible. Like we had Missy Elliott this year, Eminem the year before, Jay-Z the year before that. Right. Yeah. So you can kind of, but this is an on-ramp versus country, which is just suddenly opening a garage door and
all the
horses come running in.
That's true. Along with everybody you say in rock and roll that's been snubbed so far too. Yeah.
Yeah. So. Right. Yeah, exactly. And so that's I think the biggest problem with the Hall is that they just have so many artists that still have to get in, and this kind of country inclusion does not help. It only complicates that issue. Yeah.
Joe, for people that are unfamiliar, can you explain a little bit about the eligibility process?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There is really only one rule, which is that you become eligible 25 years after your first recording. That could be a single, could be a full-length album, could be an EP. It gets a little murky when it's like demo. It depends on if someone could purchase it. Or it could be like if you were on a compilation album. Sometimes artists get eligible because of that. But soundtrack, no. I don't think it's murky. Generally, it's just 25 years later, and that's pretty much that's it in terms of eligibility. You don't lose eligibility. It's not like if you have a certain number of tries on the ballot, then you're out and you can't try anymore. It's just, you know, like we saw Willie and Dolly, you know, eligible since the beginning, eligible for 35 or so years. It's eligibility period never closes, unlike other Halls of Fame.
Right. Cool. Thanks for explaining that. So I would love to talk about snubs, because what a fun thing to discuss. Mm-hmm. So
And I have a few more names in the country world that I think could be considered.
Okay. You're
thinking about like if they're going to go down this road, you know, obviously we said Merle and Chris and Waylon, but someone else who I think is someone who's been nominated a few times, hasn't been on the ballot in like close to 20 years, is Graham Parsons solo. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that, who, and he
has
is,
had a big influence on rock music, not just the country listeners.
I mean, he should have been inducted with the Byrds and wasn't.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's just straight up not in.
He wasn't listed with them? That's crazy.
No. In the early days of the Hall, they were a little bit more limited about who they would include as they inducted bands. Often it would be like only the original members, or like, you know, Graham was only with them for like an album, but I would say, you know, it's a significant album and it's a, you know, album that is important in their story, but was not considered. And so Graham has been, like I said, it's been a while, but I could see him returning, especially now that we're getting into this country stuff, and and it's not as murky when it comes to the rock part of him, like that's country rock pretty solidly. And then when you think about Graham Parsons, I also think about Emmylou Harris.
Yeah, for sure.
And you think especially the associations, you know, with her and who she used to play with, you'll see Emmylou with, you know, the band. I just watched The Last Waltz on Thanksgiving, right? And she shows up and fully fits with them. And, you know, she's played with Bonnie Raitt, and she's played with, I think, Linda Ronstadt. Like, it was kind of a contemporary of all those folks.
It was even
and so,
with a super in a super group with Linda.
That's right.
Dolly.
Trio.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's so with everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, she's still with us. She's still, can still sing. I got to hear Emmylou sing not long ago, and she still got it. And
nice.
She's like a dark horse, I think, because she's very well liked and respected, and definitely has her toe in both worlds. And then beyond that, it's like there's a few names that like definitely crossed over, but I'm like, I don't know about Kenny Rogers. I don't know about John Denver, right? Like, maybe if they were still around and they were catching like a second act or something, but those guys definitely crossed over in like a major way in the 80s and even before that. And, you know, Kenny Rogers started out his band First Edition, I think is what they were called.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was like a rock band, you know?
Yeah.
And so I don't know. I don't see that there's a people are really going to be scrambling to try to get those guys in. But who's to say? They were big forces.
Yeah. I hadn't even thought about that, but the John Denver thing is, I think, especially interesting because he was considered not country enough for country for years and years also. And I don't know that he's even in the Country Hall of Fame either.
I'm pretty sure he is. I'm pretty sure
he
is.
Okay.
But, you know, was he considered just like folk, I guess?
Or pop, yeah, because he famously won Entertainer of the Year at a country award, and the presenter lit the envelope on fire in protest.
that's fucking rock and roll.
That's the most rock and roll thing that's happened to John Denver. Sure.
But that's crazy.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, he was like kind of he was more folky. He was like a Jim Croce kind of. Everybody kind of considered him like that kind of style.
You know, I don't think he is. I don't think he is in the Country Music Hall of Fame. I just like assumed he would have been, but I think you're right. That's so wild.
He's just nobody will take him.
Nobody wants him.
Man. He's nobody's man. John, that's why he flew his plane into a mountain.
Oh my God.
Oh God.
Hey, he did it himself.
We finally figured it out. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh boy. We sleuthed it. Yeah. So I want to talk about side categories for a second, and then I would love to hear more about the snubs. So the side categories is an interesting thing, and it feels very arbitrary in my peripheral knowledge of things. But do you feel like that is maybe the avenue in which they kind of get some of these people in? Is they're like, oh, well, Haggard's early influence at this point because he's been around so long.
Yeah, I think totally. I mean, they quietly rebranded early influence to musical influence, which makes it even murkier. Like,
oh,
it's not
yeah,
even because the early influence category used to be pre-rock acts, and this was actually how in the early days a lot of country guys got in through this category.
Jimmy
the
Rogers,
first year
like
Jimmy
that.
Rogers was and Hank Williams was the second year, you know, like these were two guys who got in the first 2 years of the Hall of Fame because, you know, their influence, especially on the Titans, whether it's Elvis or Dylan or whoever, like these guys were like, I think Elvis on some level modeled himself a little bit after Jimmy Rogers. Right. So you have to include those guys. And then later on they put in Bill Monroe and Bob Wills and his Texas Playboys and, you know, guys like that. And then Chet Atkins got in as a sideman. And so, yeah, they would use these side categories for the most part as a way to acknowledge country kind of early on and how country is one of the many, many influences that contributes to rock and roll. I think for sure they could do something now. So the way these categories have kind of morphed as of late is that they've lost all meaning. They just have they've become like catch-all categories to just put in people who need to get in, but they don't know how else to do it. Mm-hmm, so, sure. For example, Chaka Khan got in as musical excellence this year. Judas Priest got in the same category the year before that. Year before that was LL Cool J. So it's just kind of like, and for those guys in particular, it was like, these are artists that are not getting in through the regular ballot, but need to get in. So we're going to put them in, mm-hmm. in this side category. Also, you can use musical excellence to induct people who've had like an interesting career, but not all in one place. Nile Rodgers, for example, was in Chic, but he was also a producer for Madonna and Duran Duran and the B-52s and Sister Sledge, and also did all these other things and put them in that way, right? And then also this kind of influence thing, they're starting to get into like, you know, it used to be pre-rock, and then it was, now it's like, what about Gil Scott-Heron or, you know, Kraftwerk? These are 70s artists.
Yeah.
But they're still considered to be majorly influential, maybe more so than they were commercially successful. And so that's how they're put in. And so, yeah, they could use these side categories. They can do whatever they want with these side categories. So it's just like,
yeah,
go nuts. Yeah,
those aren't the ones voted on. They're not on the ballot. Mm-mm. It's like just what, there's like a board of directors chooses or something.
A committee. Yeah, there's like a subcommittee. And there's an, you know, the people on those subcommittees have an insane amount of power, more so than the people in the nominating committee, really, because it's like subcommittee, you can be like, let's determine who we want to get in. Okay, great, they're in. Whereas the nominating committee comes in with a ballot, that still has to go out to the larger voting body. So,
right. Crazy.
Crazy. It is crazy.
It's fully nutso over here.
These whack jobs just saying who's a star.
Yeah. You know. All right, let's talk about some snubs, country or not. Joe, mm-hmm. who are the key snubs? Who needs to get into the Rock Hall just based on who's already in and who's about to be in, etc.?
Mm-hmm. You know, we've seen a lot of like kind of pop idols, pop divas get in recently, whether it's Chaka Khan or Whitney Houston or Tina Turner. Dionne Warwick really helped to establish that template of, you know, a black woman in music who, you know, was considered R&B, but really was a pop singer, you know, was put into R&B because of racism, but really was a voice that transcended all racial barriers. And she's been on the ballot a few times and she is still with us. And she really does. She needs to get in. She had so many hit singles, not only in the early 60s and then throughout that decade, but then she had this massive comeback in the 80s with, you know, That's What Friends Are For, and having this complete second act 20 years into it. She just seems so foundational. And then, you know, we got Chaka Khan in this year. I think there are two other soulful R&B singers that need to get in. The first one is Patti LaBelle. And sure. I'm thinking this especially as we are getting, you know, Mariah Carey has been eligible. I think she is a snub, but, you know, she's only been eligible for, I don't know, a handful of years. Kind of weird that she wasn't inducted immediately. I just think she's so massive that you'd think. But when you compare her to
holder for a lot of hits for a long time,
for so many different albums, singles, whatever, she's just, you know, has more accolades than anybody and is just a powerhouse singer. As we get close to that, and also like there's the Beyonce question, like we're gonna get to Beyonce within 5-ish years. It's coming up, you know. Wow. Sooner than you would imagine.
But then does Destiny Child also get in?
Probably, but probably Beyonce first. I don't know. Yeah. But all these questions, it feels like you need to address Dionne Warwick, you need to address Patti LaBelle, and you need to address Roberta Flack before you get there.
Oh yeah,
people Roberta who kind of blazed those trails to make someone like Beyonce even a possibility, and even a Mariah Carey, right? Before, so it feels like some of that work needs to happen, and all three of those women are still with us. Wow. It's like, let's please do this. I know all the Pointer Sisters are gone, and that sucks because they're not in. And there's someone else. Like when you think about Destiny's Child, you think about like the pop female trio. It's like, you know, they bridge that gap from like the Supremes to Destiny's Child, I think, because, you know, they had all these huge hits in the 70s and especially the 80s. And so I think about them and I think about how much of a bummer it is that like they're all gone. We lost a guy named George Funky Brown, who was the drummer for Kool & the Gang. And it's really depressing me how every year someone from Kool & the Gang passes away and that they continue to not be in the Hall of Fame.
Oh man.
And Kool is still with us, and the singer they brought in and then had all those great pop hits like Ladies Night and Celebration and stuff, JT Taylor, he is still with us. But we lost Ronald Bell and Dee Thomas and George Brown. It's just like, can we please get them? They are so, I mean, like, they were this amazing funk band in the 70s, and then they turned into this like powerhouse pop band with Ladies Night and Celebration and It's Too Hot and Joanna and Cherish and Get Down On It and like all these songs that then on top of that became so pivotal for hip hop sampling. Right. And I think that really elevates them to like an obvious choice, is because there are so many. Like, you think about that Hollywood swinging opening with the trumpet that is the foundation for the song Feels So Good by Puff Daddy. And then it's also a foundation for Let Me Clear My Throat by DJ Kool. And then you look at Summer Madness, which is the foundation for Summertime by Fresh Prince. And other songs by like Ice Cube and like the Kool & the Gang. If you look at, if you go to whosampled.com, which is a fun website, Kool & the Gang, I mean, it's great. If you're ever like listening to the song and you're like, who, what is this beat coming from? And you go to whosampled.com and they list it out when you're like, oh, okay. the guy who did the Taxi theme did a lot of this. Okay. interesting. But, Kool & the Gang is one of the most sampled groups in the history of hip hop. And like, it's like that alone should be enough. But also they had like these amazing hits that have withstood the test of time and everybody still knows. And like, they have the one song you play when you celebrate something. It's like, you know, it's yeah, just,
they've got the market cornered on Celebration, a thing we hate a lot.
That's a pretty good one to get too. Yeah.
I think the case for them is really strong, but I think they're a party band and they're not, maybe not as seriously considered. And it's really too bad because I think they're great. And a group that I think is often maybe marginalized because they are a party band is the B-52s.
Yeah. Oh, sure. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, maybe there's some latent homophobia there on the part of the Hall, but, you know, that's another group that, you know, I always think it's great, and I think the Hall really loves this, when a group is so deeply weird and experimental and they don't compromise to anyone else's vision except their own, and then are wildly successful anyway. Mm-hmm. Like that is such a feat, and the B-52s are like avant-garde and queer and like angular, and their music is known by everybody across the world. And so they've never even been nominated. You know, and a lot of the people I've mentioned, Kool & the Gang, B-52s, Patti LaBelle, Roberta Flack have not been nominated. And, you know, one of my big personal snubs was finally nominated last year, did not get in, but I'm holding out hope is Joy Division New Order.
Oh, yeah.
Where it's just like, I don't know, like they're so beloved still. You can't go anywhere without seeing a Joy Division shirt. Right. And, you know, so influential. There's so many bands that came after both groups that sounded like them.
Yeah, they created like a whole different sound in that like scene.
Totally.
Up in like Northern England or something. Yeah,
and Joy Division... Joy Division is like, you know, it's like if they have the critical acclaim, then New Order has the hits. And both have, you know, there's crossover. Like obviously there's Joy Division songs that everybody knows, and there's New Order releases that are very critically acclaimed, but it's like together, because they really are one band, it's like I think the case is just really strong with them.
Yeah, for sure. I was glad to see that they were on the ballot. And then Cher still hasn't been nominated.
Cher is an absolutely huge one. She's someone where, like, if you have this question of, like, we need an icon at the ceremony, it's like, yeah, pull that Cher lever.
Yeah.
I mean, she's another one where it's just like across decades, she has so many hits, whether it's with Sonny in the 60s or like her solo stuff in the 70s. I mean, also in the 60s, she was like part of the Wrecking Crew. Like she,
right,
as a vocalist, is on a lot of like pivotal rock records. And so she's got the cred. And then when you get into the 80s, she has this amazing comeback, mm-hmm, this kind of pop 80s turn, like, you know, if I could turn back time. And then again, in the late 90s, she has Believe, which is another massive. It's just like she's had so many different stages, and she's still with us, and she's still, you know, I read an interview with her recently. She seems very sharp still, and it's like Cher should be such an obvious one.
Also an accomplished actress and everything too. Like, so like,
well, she's such a big name, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. It's like, it's like we were huge. Saying, like, if people just kind of know your name, that's often the best way to get in is, mm-hmm, like Cher. Yeah. Are you fucking kidding me? Of course I'm voting for Cher.
Yeah. Well, I don't know.
Everybody,
Cher.
Everybody knows Cher, and we'll get Nick Cage to induct her, and it'll be incredible. It'll be,
yeah.
He'll have the wooden hand.
Yeah.
Yeah. It'll be perfect. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a serious list of snubs. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, like I said, it's the big problem with the Hall kind of always, you know, almost, mm-hmm, since like 5 years in, it's like you could start to say that. And it's like somewhere I have, cuz I'm an absolute dork, it's like somewhere I have a running list of like major snubs. Mm-hmm. Oh, here we go. Yeah, and so it's just like who Outkast isn't in yet. They've been eligible for maybe 5 years. Not as big of a snub when like the year's waited isn't that long, but to me, Outkast is like they're like a first ballot, you know, as soon as they're, mm-hmm, eligible, they would get in. Big Boy inducted Kate Bush this year. I think that's a good sign that maybe they'll get in next year. You know, as we're running through the 90s rock bands, Smashing Pumpkins has still not been nominated. Similarly, like been eligible maybe 5 or 6 years. Mm-hmm. They just seem so obvious to me. You know, and then you get into like, you know, there's a bunch of influential 80s, like kind of fringe bands that maybe weren't popular commercially, but like have been very influential. And like, I'm thinking about Sonic Youth. I'm thinking about The Replacements. Thinking about Pixies.
Pixies, you know, big one. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Even like Kurt Cobain would be, I think, said something to the effect of like, there is no Nirvana without Pixies. Like they just were like, yeah, we do slow, fast, we do loud, quiet.
Right.
Like
that's soft, loud. Yeah. they just kind of, they took that template that the Pixies really perfected.
Yeah. Yeah. That's all. Thanks for letting us dig in to that. Before we run out of time, as I could honestly talk about that stuff for
sure.
Hours.
I mean, we could be really like fun. Iron Maiden, Soundgarden, Salt-N-Pepa, right. MC5, yeah, right. Motorhead, yes. You know,
Ray Stevens.
Beck.
Start throwing in shit.
Weird Al on a actually more serious note. Maybe.
I mean, Weird Al should be in there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Terry Jacks.
Dan Fogelberg.
Yeah. We're talking Dan Fogler from Balls of Fury.
One of my favorite things to talk about is that sort of thing. So thanks for indulging, mm-hmm, me. Before Anytime. We are out of time, I would love to do a hard pivot and talk to you about a song that you wrote and performed on your album, which is a pop country parody.
Absolutely.
As we are a country music podcast. First of all, please tell us about the song, but also I'm dying to know what artist or artists influenced the styling of that song.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this all stemmed from on the radio. And I think it was more of a folk song that I heard. It might've been like James Taylor, but on the radio, I heard the lyric, "I'm gonna love you till the day I die." And immediately I thought, well, unless, you know, she dies first. Then, like, you know,
yeah,
it's a little different. You'll probably move on, find a new wife, you know. Because and so I was like, that's pretty funny. And so I wrote that down, like probably a good year before I even seriously considered making comedy music or making an album. But that was always just kind of in my list of ideas that I thought was like a really potent idea. Mm-hmm. And so that was when I decided, oh, I'm going to make an album. I'm going to make music. That was the first thing I revisited. And and it was like, you know, I think, you know, a folk kind of James Taylor-y song is funny, but there's something a little bit more alive about country. And I feel like the sentiment, the lyric can still fit with a country song just as easily. And I have to say that, like, what I drew from was having absorbed country songs from different artists over my entire life and then just kind of like used what I thought was country that was in my kind of subconscious and let that inform the song versus any specific artist or song.
All right. Yeah, that's so fair. It's just
Joe's,
like,
interpretation. Joe's instinct,
an accumulation.
Instinctual.
Yes, it was very much on instinct. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah. Well, it sounds
great.
Solidly radio country. So good job putting it all together.
Thanks. Yeah,
honestly, better than a lot of radio country. So
that's too kind. And if you had any ideas of like who you thought it sounded like, I would love to hear it because I'm curious, like. You know, it's just, it kind of sprung forth from the kind of psyche, so to speak. But I'm like, I don't fully know what I'm tapping into here.
I don't know that I could say like sonically exactly what it was, but it felt, you know, very like a very palatable, like sort of 90s, 2000s radio country. So you're like, you're rock influenced country, or maybe not rock influenced exactly, but you know, like arena country is maybe what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
So it sounded like, oh yeah, this could be a Garth song. This could be early Toby Keith. This could be Brooks and Dunn. I was like, oh yeah, this has got a little, but narrow, like it's got that to it.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
It wasn't like super modern because it doesn't have trap beats in it, which all country songs have to have.
Isn't that funny? Because I think maybe when I was like, maybe when I was trying to tap into something, I listened to like Morgan Wallen and I was like, oh, this doesn't sound like what I'm hearing in my head. Like this isn't helping me. And that's probably why I just was like, I got to just like go based on instinct and impulse here, because listening to the new shit wasn't exactly doing it for me.
No.
But you know what? I definitely, so after I wrote it, I'm very lucky to have a collaborator who takes care of all the music stuff, like the production. And I can be like, here's what I'm thinking. Here's what I would like to try to get across. And I definitely sent him some ideas. And now I'm like, can I find them? And really, it's funny. All I did was I looked up what the hot country songs were at the time. This would have been like summer 2022. And then I was like, this is okay. Let's go this route. Now I'm like, can I find the emails where I was like, this is what I want it to sound like? Because it was like, it was funny. I picked like randomly. I was like, okay. Who's number one on the country charts right now? And I pulled it up and I was like, this is perfect. I don't have to look beyond one song because it was exactly, it was like every cliche that I wanted. Now I'm like, can I look up the list of number one country songs at that time? List of Billboard number one country songs. All right, if you'll indulge me.
I'll indulge. There's a pretty good chance it's just statistically a Morgan Wallen song, I think, but
yeah, let's, all right, it was 2022. It was, I think it was Cody Johnson.
Oh,
any sense?
I have heard that name. I couldn't tell you a single song that he sings.
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure it was, let me see if I pull up Till You Can't by Cody Johnson and see if this is about right. Sorry if this is...
From what I gather, I think I have heard a little bit of Cody Johnson, and I think that sound is pretty spot on.
But yeah.
I might be wrong about who we're thinking of, because I'm not very familiar with Cody Johnson.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so funny. It's just like they're like fishing in the video. Yep. It was. Yeah. So anyway, yep. Thank you for going on that little journey with me. But like, I'm pretty sure it was Cody Johnson. That was the inspiration for when I was talking to Yusu, and I was like, what I wanted it to sound like as he put the instrumentation together. I was like, check out this motherfucker, Cody. I think this will take us to the right spot. And you know, I believe that it did.
Yeah, no, it turned out great. So yeah, you should definitely check out Joe's album, which is so funny. But then also you made a music video for this song in particular, which people can check out as well.
Yeah, absolutely. We just released another music video, more of a pop song. And you know, there will be more music videos to come.
Yeah, so stay tuned. I think that just leads us into what should happen next, which is plugs. Joe, thank you for doing the show. Thanks for educating us and our listeners. Where can people keep up with your projects and your comedy and everything else?
Yeah, absolutely. So the aforementioned music videos and album, all that stuff, if you want to find it, I mean, if you type in my name, KWACZALA, I'm pretty much going to be the only hit when you search Joe Quazala. And then if you search funny songs, you don't even need to finish the rest. If you forgot like the second half, you're going to get there. You find the album and stuff, and let's do it on Spotify. And then at Joe Qua, JOEKWA is my Instagram and my TikTok. I have links and videos and all sorts of stuff on those pages. And then also Joe K on Twitter. I still, you know, as we gasp for breath on that website, I still post some things there too. So,
yeah.
You know, there's many different avenues. Go ahead and jump on the train. Let's hoot and holler and have a country fried good time.
Perfect. Perfect outro for that. Joe, thanks again for joining us. And thank you all for listening to this episode of Take This Pod and Shove It. I was thrilled to be able to do something a little different on this episode, so we hope you liked it too. We've just got a few more episodes before the end of the year, so make sure you are sticking with us for our best of 2023, etc., as that's coming out. If you want to check out our back catalog of bonus episodes, you can find that at patreon.com/takethispod. Also just a really nice way to support a couple of boys who do this for fun and don't run ads or anything. So yeah, you can check that out. And if you really like the episode, share it with a friend, leave us a 5-star rating, and please only 5 stars. Don't be a narc. And you can say something nice as well, if you feel like you have a little extra time while you're taking that poop. Danny, anything else you want to add?
No, I hope the poops are good.
Yeah,
I hope they treat you well. Did you mention the Gmail? Course you did, right? You're a pro.
No, I didn't do that. Yeah, if you
didn't, if do you the get, Gmail,
why don't you right. take that, yeah. And then we'll let
oh
we'll,
hey we'll let's close not up. Pick up your slack, you goddamn slacker. If you want to get if you want to get in touch with us in any way, any suggestions for future episodes, any nice comments you'd like to send our way, or just to say a howdy, you can do that at takethispodandshoveit@gmail.com. and other than that, I think that sums it all up, right? You said everything else.
That sounds good to me. Yeah, I think that's going to do it. And you know what? It's good timing, because I have to go leave to go see the Hold Steady. So,
oh, nice.
So I'll catch you guys later. We'll see you next week with another episode. Thanks again, Joe.
Bye-bye.
Take this pot and shove it.